Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, September 5th, 2015. This is episode 1217. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Prosper. Prosper is a peer-to-peer lending marketplace that connects people who are looking to borrow money with those who have money to lend. Visit prosper.com/twit and receive a $50 Visa gift card when you get a loan. And by Gazelle. Would you like to get cash for your old iPhone? Well, Gazelle makes it easy. Shipping is free and the payment is fast. What's your iPhone worth? Find out at gazelle.com. And by the Ring Video Doorbell. With a built-in HD camera and microphone, you can monitor your front door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like being home, even when you're not. Right now, get $10 off the Ring Video Doorbell when you go to ring.com/tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. And yeah, it's that time once again. Talk high tech. Computers and the internet, yeah. Less so, though, computers and the internet. More like mobile devices these days, isn't it? Smartphones, smart watches, lots of, this is the phone. This is phone week gone crazy, and next couple of weeks will be too. We also talk about the home theater situation, since that's become very high tech. Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guru, will join us in just a little bit. The reason I kind of stopped myself when I said computers and the internet. Of course, when I started doing this show in the early 90s. It was just computers. The internet wasn't even in widespread use. It was pretty much limited to academics and government in the early 90s. It wasn't until mid-90s, right, that the Netscape Navigator, Mozilla, or Mosaic, that was it. The first browsers came out. People started getting online. So I've been doing this since before the internet. And now I'm doing it after the internet. It's still the internet, but it's not computers in the internet. In fact, I just read a great article by Benedict Evans. Forget about the mobile internet. It's just the internet now. Increasingly, as people use smartphones, for a while it was, you'd use your phone to get on the internet when you were in line at the grocery store, stuck at the Department of Motor Vehicles. Now, really, most people get online most of the time on their phone, rarely on a computer, somewhat on tablets. More than half of the people who visit our website, techguylabs.com, do it on a mobile device. When we were redesigning our podcast website, I really had to think about what we were doing and how important a website was. And it was much less important than it used to be. I looked at the statistics, how people visited us, how people listened to podcasts. Do you ever listen to podcasts? I have a whole separate business from the radio show called Twit, This Week in Tech. It's at, if you Google it, you'll find it. It's at twit.tv. But we do, 25 different podcasts. I guess you call them a podcast. I don't like that word, but that's what everybody understands. Those are shows that don't exist on the radio or on TV, but instead on the internet. And people download them and listen to them usually on their mobile devices, just like you would radio. We do video as well, so I'm going to say just like you do TV. A lot of people watch us on Rokus and TiVos and things like that. But for the first 10, the business is about 10 years old. For the first 8 of those 10 years, 80% of that time, the way most people listen is they'd go to iTunes, they'd find a show they like. There is, I don't know if you know it, a podcast section in iTunes, little visited, but it does exist. They'd go there and they'd say, oh, there's an interesting show. And maybe oftentimes a show that they had listened to on the radio, that they wanted to download. They download it to their desktop computer. I'm not kidding. It seems antiquated. And then they'd hook their iPod up. That's why it was called podcasting. You hook their iPod up to their desktop computer and it would copy over. And then they'd untether their iPod and take it in the car or as they exercise and listen. A three-step process, really, just to listen to a show. And even those of us who were in the business, and I built a pretty good business around it, knew that this was not a very good situation. It was just too hard. Of course, what you got was people who really wanted to listen, so that's nice. I mean, that's great. But there were a lot more people who couldn't do it, didn't know how to do it. My podcast network is all about technology, so they were geeks, so it wasn't so hard for them. But if you start a podcast about knitting or model cars or anything normal, non-geeky, it'd be hard to find an audience because it'd be hard for people to do it. Well, now, thanks to mobile devices, and every smartphone has a podcast app, they either come with it or you download it, it's much easier. You can listen live. There are even standalone apps for my network, the Twit Network. You can listen live. You can watch on the screen. And so what's happened is that people are no longer, the computer is being, it's not gone. Although if you look at PC sales, it's going fast. It's not gone. It's just less important. We all probably still, if you listen to this show, probably still have a computer somewhere, a laptop or a desktop somewhere. But more and more what you're doing, if you measured the amount of time you spend on a computing device, it would be on a mobile device, either a tablet or a, even less so now, tablets are starting to die out as the phones get bigger. Turns out if you have a phone that's over 5.5 inches or bigger, an iPhone 6 Plus or bigger, you don't really need an iPad so much because it's almost big enough that you can do what you want to do on that. And so it's a very interesting change. When we redesigned the website, we had to start thinking, well, most of the people who are going to come to this website aren't going to come on big screens. They're going to come on little screens. And this article by Benedict Evans says, stop thinking of it as, the mobile internet, like the little brother to the big internet. It is the internet. It is how most people visit the internet. Here's a stat. 5 billion people who have access to the internet on the earth today. 5 billion. 4 billion and more and growing have a mobile phone. That's 80% of the people who are... actually, let's put it this way. 5 billion adults. Let's say that. 7 billion total, but 5 billion adults. 80% of all adults on the globe have a mobile phone. In the United States, 77%, we just found out, have smartphones. And they're doing most of their surfing, their visiting of the internet. Think about yourself on that device now. So... I have to change how I describe the show, isn't it? It's really it's the smartphone show. And this, the last couple of weeks underscored that. There is such vibrant and exciting competition in the world of smartphones. Apple started it in 2007, and to some extent, at least in the U.S., they still drive it. Their phones are so expensive, and Apple has never made a cheap iPhone. So their phones are so expensive that they don't do well in the rest of the world. They do well in the first world. Big industrialized nations where people have money to spend. In China as well, where it's such a big number of people that even a small percentage of wealthy people is enough to make it a good market. That's where Apple does well. The rest of the market, the other half of the market, is occupied by inexpensive Android phones. Not the high-end Android phone, but inexpensive Android phones. Nevertheless, there is vibrant, exciting competition in this market. This is, even though we've saturated in some ways in the United States, 77% have smartphones. That means most of the rest probably don't want them, right? Is that you? You're happy with your little flip phone? I get this all the time. I get a week's battery life on my flip phone. Yeah, but you don't do anything on it but make phone calls. I rarely make phone calls anymore. It's silly to call my mobile a smartphone. It's a computer. It's not a phone. It's a camera. It's a media consumption device. I listen to books all the time. I surf the net all the time. And I carry a Note 5. That's pretty big, 5.7 inches. That's my computer. That's why big phones are selling now. People realize I spend more time on that. Japan was the leader in this. The Japanese, even a few years ago, weren't buying computers. They were buying mobile, and they were buying mobiles that were more complicated with bigger screens, really much more like computers than we were in the States. So 2007, Apple changes the landscape, and we are still waiting. You know, the big Apple announcements next week is this week. It's Wednesday. So everybody's rushing to get their smartphone out before Apple announces theirs, hoping to get some of the market share and certainly some of the attention before Apple steals all the air out of the room and becomes the story. It's not going to be that way this year. Apple's just one of many now. We'll talk about smartphones, smartwatches, digital photography, anything with a chip in it. That's what this show's about. Even the internet and computers. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, I blame myself. I can't stop talking. In radio, that's called dead air. Not allowed to do it. Have you listened? Let me ask you, because Heather Hammond's the hipster in the bunch here, being a youth. You're a ute. Let me ask you if you listened to the new Apple Music radio station, Beats One. We talked about this before, didn't we?
We did. The one you played was, I agreed with you, awful. But, God, what did I find?
They have their own
indie thing that was really like relaxed.
Yeah. So that's one of the things really about good. Apple Music that's different is they have Pandora-style stations that are programmed by humans, as opposed to Beats One, which is a radio station, which I'm not a fond of, but it's okay. So the reason I bring that up is your 90 days are almost up. I didn't mean to scare you.
I haven't used it that much. I need to really.
Did you sign up for the free trial?
Yeah, for sure.
So that was June 29th, July 29th, August 29th, September 29th will be your 30 days. You've got three more weeks to decide, and all you have, by the way, will automatically renew if you didn't do anything about it, and that means you'll be paying $10 a month.
Right.
And that's the question: is it worth it?
At 10, yeah.
You think at $10 a month it's worth it?
Probably. I'm a little old school, even though you just said I was a hipster, because I like my CD collection.
Oh, you are old school. I take it all back. You're a fuddy-duddy.
I'm attached. I'm really attached. But the more I use some of the streaming services, the more I go, oh, my God. Like,
oh my God.
Forget about what I know that I want to listen to.
Yeah, you don't need anything anymore.
I turned on a 70s station on my new Sonos speaker and, like,
oh, you got some Sonos, huh? Yeah.
Oh, I don't own that one, you know, so it's...
Did you get Sonos because of me?
Of course.
And so when did you get that?
It came on Tuesday, I think.
Oh, what do you think?
I'm loving it so far.
Yeah.
I haven't had a lot of chance to play with it, interact, and...
So people understand what we're talking about, sonos.com. And I plug them so much, they really ought to buy ads, but they don't. I get money from them. I just send them money. It's a one-way street, really. But they make these internet-connected speakers, but they also connect to one another. So you can have a Sonos throughout your house. Remember the old days? This was something fancy people had. They'd have speakers built into the wall, and they'd be throughout the house, and you could turn on music and hear it throughout the house and stuff. That was for very fancy people. But now anybody can do this. They range in price from $200 to $500, I think. For the best speaker they make, the Play 5, which has... But then you need two of them, so it gets expensive because you're for stereo. And then you need more in your bedroom and your living room and your kitchen. And then if you have a home theater, you need the sound bar plus the subwoofer plus the surrounds. And pretty soon it gets a little...
It could, depending on the size of your living space.
But what's nice is you can play your own music collection. They can pick up your own music collection if your computer's on. But they can also go out and get Pandora and Spotify and not Apple Music yet, although I bet you they're going to announce that soon. They have to, right?
Yeah. I mean, I just bought it on faith of your recommendation.
Wow. That always scares
me. No, because I was so happy because once I plugged it in, I realized it came with all this streaming music that I wasn't aware was already also on it or in it or available.
Yeah. Well, if you have a Pandora account, and Pandora, there's free accounts if you don't mind listening to that. So if you have Pandora, it's a great pan, because then you just, you use your phone or your tablet to control it or your computer. So you can play your favorite Pandora station. You were playing a 70s station, for instance. Was that a Pandora or a Spotify?
From Sonos.
Oh, it was Sonos?
Yeah.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
I couldn't believe it. I opened the app and I'm like, wait, you already have music. Okay.
Oh, I didn't know that. So I just learned something from you.
Yeah.
Nice.
So anyway, it's been a lot of fun. And the sound is amazing. I got one of the smaller ones as a trial thing.
Yeah, you shouldn't spend. You should get the small first.
Yeah, love and feel like it's not enough sound for the room. I can get the big one.
Right.
But so far, everything's perfect, and it moves around easily. And
that's the nice thing. You can plug it. Plug it
in white.
Yeah, of course. The ones in the kitchen are white.
But yeah, well, I think to your point earlier, people would pay someone to wire their whole house.
Yeah, you remember
and this
that
thing just.
No, it just does it. And the thing is, it's not an easy thing to do because, and this is more subtle, technology people understand this, but normal people just say, oh, this is nice, it works. But if you were to do kind of Bluetooth or something and different, they would all be at different spots in the song and it would sound terrible. Sonos does some magic. I know, frankly, it's pretty impressive. So that even if you have speakers, all, you know, 20 speakers, they all are playing the same music exactly the same point. So you can have, they call it party mode. You can literally light up your whole house with the same songs and they're all in sync. So you don't get any weird echoing or weird, which you would get if you used different systems. So it's nice. I like it. Anyway, I don't know how I got into that. Oh,
sorry.
I was talking about Apple Music and I was just wondering if you're going to keep it. That would be that would be a precondition for me to keep it. They'd have to have it on Sonos.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So I am sitting here looking at a jam-packed board with lots of calls, and here we are wasting their time. So maybe I should get to one. Who should I talk to here?
Let's do talk to Alan in Hawaii. I just realized I didn't ask him if he's weathering the storm there.
Is there a big storm?
I thought I heard that.
Let's find out. Hi, Alan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Aloha, Leo. It's dry in Hawaii.
Good. Which island are you on?
I'm on Oahu.
Okay.
And we did have three hurricanes that went through here, and they all missed us.
Lucky, lucky. That's good.
Well, I guess we're a small place in a big ocean.
Yeah, the ocean is a large area, isn't it?
Yes.
What can I do for you, Alan?
You know, it's funny because with your opening segment and Sonos, I have all of them. So I've had Sonos for almost 10 years.
Isn't it awesome?
I have six zones throughout my house, and it was because we completely built a brand new house, and at the end, my wife said, hey, so where's all the wires for the speakers?
Oops.
And I went, oops. And at the time, I had to do a Google search for digitally distributed music systems, and they were, I think, four or five pages down. And I finally found this little thing, Sonos, and I investigated and went, this is amazing. This will do it. So it saved my butt.
Yeah. And it is really a great solution, I have to say.
It is amazing, yeah. And I've had it for years, and I endorsed it. It's amazing. But my call today had to do with mobile devices because I have an iPad 2 and I have a Note 4. And my first question is, on my iPad 2, can they actually wear out?
not really. I mean, there's no moving parts. I guess if you bang them around, but you'd have to damage it, physically damage it.
It just doesn't seem to work as fast as it used to. And what I'm
Web. Yeah, so solid-state memory, the kind of memory in all of our mobile devices, does have one flaw. It gets slower over time. And generally speaking, it would be a worthwhile thing to refresh it. I don't know. What's the latest version of the operating system you have on your iPad 2?
The latest, which is
Okay.
8.4 or whatever.
Yeah, 9 will be out next week, or actually probably 2 weeks from Wednesday. Hang on. We got Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guy, is coming. I should talk about wearing out. And we definitely have new phones out. The Note 5 just came out, and we expect a new iPad on Wednesday. So this might be a good time to at least start thinking. iPad sales have plummeted, and I think that's because they don't wear out. Apple has to create artificial wear. We'll talk about that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson is our home theater guru. He performs his magic each and every week at this time. Hello, Scott.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
Good to see you.
And you?
I was defending HDR this week in our chat room because there was, some mocking of it. Because I think, unfortunately, the TV and the motion picture industry did not do themselves any favors with 3D. They sold it to high heaven. People saw it and they said no.
Yeah. And this, a lot of people did.
Yeah.
There are a number of people who really dig it, but a lot of people said no. That's right.
Do they still make 3D TVs?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Sure.
So you might, I have one.
Yeah.
I have the glasses. I have two.
Now,
I never
interesting,
use it.
Interestingly, Vizio last year dropped 3D from their entire line of TVs. Yeah.
I think that's a bellwether.
It might very well be.
So, yeah. But the new thing is going to be Ultra HD, UHD. Sometimes we call
with
it
high dynamic 4K, range.
With HDR, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and some people, as you say, some people you know, are saying, oh, HDR, it's just the next 3D. It's nothing big. I couldn't disagree more.
Yeah, and you're one of the few people who've seen it because there's only 5 theaters in the U.S. that have it. In fact, somebody in the chat room said, oh, no, I've seen it, and I didn't like it. I saw The Hobbit in HDR. And I said, you didn't. You saw HFR, high frame
rate.
So I understand why people are confused.
It's a very confusing business, especially nowadays with all these acronyms, or rather initialisms, to be more precise.
Yeah.
HDR, HFR, WCG for wide color gamut.
Oy.
HFR, of course, stands for high frame rate. And that's another one that people are going to be very divided on.
Yeah.
Because some people like the look, but a lot of people don't. It resembles very much something on LCD TVs called the soap opera effect.
Ooh, and we don't like that.
We don't like that. And that arises because LCD TVs, because they have a problem called a motion blur, so things in motion get kind of blurry on the screen, partly simply because that's the way movies and video work. You're taking a series of still images 30 times a second or 24 times a second. And if something is in motion during that each of those still frames, it's going to be blurry. I mean, what happens when you take a picture of something in motion with your camera? If the shutter speed isn't really, really fast, it's going to look blurry. Well, the same thing happens with movies and film and TV. But LCD TVs add on to that. They make the problem worse. And so what a lot of manufacturers, most manufacturers have done, is to do something called frame interpolation, which synthesizes new frames in between the real ones. And this actually has the effect of reducing motion blur, but at the expense of creating a new problem called the soap opera effect, which makes movies especially look like they were shot on video, like they were shot in a soap opera studio. And it just looks very plasticky and weird. You and I have mentioned that many times. I've gotten a couple of emails from people saying, how do I get rid of it? And still maintain the sharpness? Well, there is a way to do it, which is something that most people may not understand. And that is to enable a different control in the TV if they're separate. In some cases they are, some cases they're not. Frame interpolation is one thing. Black frame insertion is another. It's sometimes called backlight scanning or backlight flashing. And it turns off the backlight for a certain percentage of the time of each frame. And this, in fact, has the effect of cleaning up motion blur. It's really quite remarkable.
Oh. I don't think special high-priced OLED TV does that. But
well, now, an OLED TV will actually, believe it or not, exhibit the same problem.
Right.
And since yours is a Samsung, I disagree. I think it is in there. It's buried in the menu system.
I will look for it.
And it's probably under some odd name.
Samsung doesn't like to use normal words.
No, they don't.
They have custom names for everything.
Yes.
They don't call the motion blur, for instance, motion blur. They have some fancy.
No, they call it auto. Well, yeah, they call the frame interpolation Auto Motion Plus.
There you go.
Now that's going to be obvious what that does, right?
So getting back to the HDR question, is there going to be HDR content? And when?
Yeah.
So I obviously, and I think people understand this, you need both the TV that can do it, and that would presumably be a new 4K or UHD TV. Most of them will have HDR, right?
Well,
no.
At the moment, only Samsung has it.
Okay.
LG OLED TVs are going to get it in a firmware update.
Okay.
Sony TVs are going to get it in a firmware update. So we're right on the verge.
So,
and Samsung is already out.
It'd be reasonable to look for a TV that could do it if we're going to get a way to play back HDR movies. Are we? What about the content?
The content is here. It's on MGO. It's streaming on MGO, Amazon
Netflix
Instant Video.
Does it. Yeah.
Netflix does it. But of course, those are streaming. And those of us who are concerned with ultimate quality want really an optical disc, an Ultra HD Blu-ray with high dynamic range.
Here's how we get around to the thing you actually wanted to talk about, which is the new
Notice
Samsung.
Notice how I did that.
The new Samsung Blu-ray. So is this exactly. going to do HDR?
It is.
Oh.
Samsung announced the first Ultra HD Blu-ray player at the IFA conference in Berlin this week. And it will play back ultra high dynamic range discs, those discs that are encoded with high dynamic range.
Plus 60 frames per second.
Yep.
So that's high frame rate as well.
Yes, if the content is recorded and stored on the disc in that format.
And the new color space, the new 10-bit color space, right?
Correct. Well, 10-bit resolution, which allows high dynamic range, and a wider color gamut as well.
Okay.
And it's probably going to be, well, the Ultra HD Blu-ray spec allows for both, for two of the wider color gamuts, range of colors that we might have in the future. One is the same one you see in the theaters, which is known by the name P3. And the other one is known by the name BT2020, which we don't, it's so wide that there are no displays that can do it yet. So that's a little bit down the way.
As we mentioned earlier this year, there is a UHD Blu-ray spec that was finalized. This is presumably one of the first players to support that.
Is the first player to support it.
So
exactly.
It would behoove one in the market for Blu-ray players, because frankly, I think the only people in the market for Blu-ray players at this point are videophiles.
Like AVS forum members. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So behoove you to wait how much?
I've heard that this player, the very first player, will be under $500.
Well, that's actually good. I mean,
which is not bad.
It sounds like a lot, but.
Do you remember the first Blu-ray player? It was from Samsung. It was the BDP-1000, and it cost $1,000.
Right. Now, price has dropped. You can get a Blu-ray player now for
under $100.
Yeah.
Easy.
But still, under $500 is a good starting point, and that means in a couple of years it'll be even less. Yeah,
I agree. Even better, Fox announced that its first slate of Ultra HD Blu-ray titles, which will have high dynamic range.
Oh, good. Into
them. So it's Kingsman, The Secret Service, Exodus, Fantastic Four, X-Men Days of Future Past, Life of Pi, The Maze Runner.
Life of Pi is the one good movie in that list, but okay.
Yeah. Well, hey, Days of Future Past I thought was pretty good.
Was that the Terrence Malick movie? What was that, Days of Future Past?
X-Men.
That's X-Men. The latest. No, forget
X-Men.
It. That was
you know,
a terrible
if you're not into
movie.
That. The latest Fantastic Four I heard was very bad.
Oh,
I didn't
the
see
worst.
It.
So okay, but the good news is, and the important point here is, these new standards will start to be adopted by television manufacturers, Blu-ray players, and content creators. And that sounds like that's the moving target a new purchaser should aim at.
Yep.
Next year?
Yep, absolutely.
All
next
right.
year, no question.
Scott Wilkinson, he's at the AVS Forum, avsforum.com. He's editor-in-chief there. And, of course, our home theater podcast is at twit.tv/HTG. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. All right, Scotty. It's all
Actually,
yours.
I thank you, Captain.
Yeah.
Youper in the chat room, movies will be expensive. I don't have any confirmation of this, but I've heard that these discs will be on the order of like $30, which, is not cheap, but it's not that much more.
There's a few movies that'd be worth buying if you really
There are. And as more come out, there'll be more that'll be worth buying.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But when you see this, and I really hope to get Leo to get you an opportunity to see true high dynamic range content on a true high dynamic range display.
Well, I will. I mean, I'll probably buy.
You'll be blown away.
I will buy as soon as they're available. I'll buy both that Blu-ray combo and the TV.
Yeah.
Actually,
yeah.
You said Samsung's already out. The Samsung's already out.
Samsung TVs are, yes.
See, the problem is, which TV do I replace? I have the OLED in my den, and I don't want to replace that. I love that, even though it's starting to be, my God, it's already 3 years old. And then I have a Viera, a beautiful Panasonic Viera, 70-inch Viera in the living room.
Beautiful. It's beautiful.
So I don't want to replace that.
No. That's a tough question. Your Samsung OLED is 55 inches, I think.
Yeah, it's small, but I'm right there.
Relatively small. But you're right there, and it's such a gorgeous picture.
It's actually a bigger, if I want to see the best, you know, experience, I go in the den because it's bigger in the den at 55 inches than the living room 70, which is pretty far.
Because of where you're sitting.
The living room's
big.
Because
of your seating distance. Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
I need a second man cave, clearly.
Clearly.
A UHD man cave is what I've got.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly right. It's always something, ain't it?
Take it away, Blue Jay.
Thank you. Thank you. So, hey, everybody in the chat room. So glad to see you all. I'm looking back in my history here, and I don't see any. Amy Ashi said that it's almost time for my segment, but now it's almost time for my segment to be over. Here we go. Fred S., what 4K TV models are currently available with high dynamic range and expanded color gamut? As I said, there's only one, Samsung. They have three different lines, I believe, of what are called SUHD TVs that currently have high dynamic range HDR capabilities. And, of course, they're UHD. And they have an expanded color gamut. Their color gamut reaches about 90-something percent of the cinema gamut called P3. So they have they're the only ones on the market. But LG announced at IFA that a new OLED TV, Panasonic announced the new OLED TV, which we talked about on last week's show, which will ship with high dynamic range capability. But at the moment, it's only scheduled to be in the European and Japanese markets. And we just found out the price tag, 10,000 euros. Okay, so that's over 11,000 bucks at the current exchange rate. So that's expensive. But, you know, again, it's OLED technology. It's 65-inch. It's high dynamic range capability. And Panasonic brought in a Hollywood colorist, someone who stares at screens all day long and judges color, evaluates color. And that guy helped them. His name is Mike Soa. That guy helped them tune this TV to get the right colors, to get the right coming out of black. One problem with OLED is that I don't see my timer here, but I did just catch the music.
You have 19 seconds. We're running out.
Thank you so much.
Sorry,
well, then
that.
I'll come back.
Hang in there. Props to our musical director, Nathan Staton. He's got, excellent musical taste. Good stuff. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. I love calling him the musical director. I just imagine him with the headphones and a baton in the back with the orchestra there, making sure the show keeps him moving. I feel terrible. I hope Alan, I don't know if Alan's still there. I hope he is. Are you still there, Alan?
You bet.
Oh, you're very patient. We wanted to get Scott Wilkinson in, but we were talking before, Scott, about your iPad 2 and Note 3. And the question, which is a great question, is does this stuff wear out? It doesn't, mostly. Solid state stuff doesn't wear out. Hard drives that spin wear out. But things can get slower only because as you use them, you cruft them up. So it's the same advice applies to smartphones that we give on computers. I would say at least every year you want to do a complete refresh. Just wipe it all off and start over. It's easy with smartphones because the operating system for a smartphone is stored in the firmware there. So you can easily wipe everything off. If you have an Android device, just make sure you back it up. Google has a setting that will let you back up everything, including which apps are installed. That way the restore is fairly painless. Apple, if you have an Apple device, similarly, Apple will allow you to back everything up either to iCloud or to your computer, and then you can restore. A restore is okay. That's not the problem so much. The problem is SSDs, solid-state drives, flash drives do tend or can slow down over time. And I'm not completely convinced that a restore is enough to get them moving fast again, but it's better than nothing, and it's really the only thing option available to you. The rumors are, and I haven't tried the new iOS, but iOS 9 should work on an iPad 2. That's the oldest it will work on. And the rumor is that Apple has made some effort to improve performance on older iPads using iOS 9. And this is what I was kind of alluding to as we wrapped up the call. The only way that Apple and other companies can obsolete solid-state devices is in software. by saying, we're not going to support that anymore. And if you want it to work, you're going to have to get a new one. And Apple has to date not done that for the iPad 2, but I wouldn't be surprised if they do at some point.
Now, for my Note 4 that I have...
Oh, you have a 4. I thought you said the 3. You have a Note 4.
I have a Note 4.
Okay.
And you got a Note 5. So I wanted to know, is there that much of a difference that I should upgrade? And one last thing, based on your show last week, the stylus on the Note 4 can go in backwards as well.
Did you try it?
Just slightly.
If I were you, I would not push that one. Really, I thought it couldn't. I thought the early... I should check. I thought the earlier designs prevented that. So don't stick your stylus in backwards. That's a bad idea. I do think, one of the things they changed with the Note 5 is that instead of being this kind of passive stylus that you actually have to use a fingernail to remove, as in the Note 4, you can, on the Note 5, it's more like you might have seen on a Surface and other devices. You push it. It has an ejection mechanism. So you push it in.
Spring loaded.
Yeah, it pops out. And that's part of the source of the issue on the Note 5. I think the Note 5 is both better and worse. It's better in one respect. They have put less of TouchWiz on it. That's the Samsung stuff. And every Android manufacturer does this, and I wish they would just knock it off. The stuff that makes it Samsung specific. It's junkware. This is much cleaner. You can really disable all the Samsung stuff and hide it and make it better. And I even got mine from AT&T, which of course puts its own junkware on there, and that's even better. But I said it's better and it's worse. It's worse in one respect because on the Note 4, as you know, you can remove the back. You can have an external another battery that you could pop in. I have 3 Note 4 batteries, so I never have to worry about running out of juice. I just carry my extra batteries with me. And they had a SIM card for extra storage. That's gone on the Note 5. But it does allow the Note 5 to be prettier. I don't know if that's an important thing for you. It has.
I wish they made one bigger because I still think this is too small. And honestly, if I had a phone component in my iPad, I'd put a Bluetooth headset on
it. Yeah. Well, you may be in luck because one company, who was it? Was it Asus announced, maybe Acer, announced a 7-inch phone, the biggest phone I've ever heard of at IFA this week. And, of course, there's always the Nexus 6, which is a full 6 inches and notably bigger than the Note 4 or 5. Because if Note 5 now is the same size as the Note 4, 5.7 inches. It is a little, because it doesn't have the removable back, it's a little thinner and lighter. I think it's quite elegant. I really like the Note 5. I think it's really, the problem is it's expensive. It's really expensive. It's breathtakingly expensive. Well over $800. This one, the one I got, the 64 gig model, is $850. And that kind of, when Windows PCs are $500, $850 on this thing is a lot of money. On the other hand, so it's up to you and your financial situation, but I do prefer it. Even though I can't put a new battery in and I can't put SD card in, I think the Note 5 is great.
They would never put in a iPad a phone component.
Well, you can kind of do it yourself. I actually take and make calls on my iPad using third-party apps like Tango, Line, Viber, Google Hangouts. All can be installed on the iPad. And Skype's a good example. If you can buy a phone number from Skype, I don't know if people know this. You can actually have a landline number in your area code or any area code that people can dial with a landline or any kind of phone. Except it's not; it's a Skype call. They don't know that, and it will ring your iPad just like a phone. You can press OK, pick it up. It'll use the iPad mic and speakers. You can make you can have a call, and I do that all the time, and I love it. In fact, I have it set up with Google's Hangouts and Google Voice that my iPad rings, and if I'm using the iPad, when my phone rings, it's kind of forwarding it to the iPad, and I can pick it up on the iPad. I think Apple's new OS will do that as well, won't it? The handoff continuity feature, won't that allow you? You have to have an iPhone. You don't, so you're out of luck. But Apple designs everything to work best if you just stick with Apple. None of this mixing.
I have an Android phone, an iPad, and I work in Windows.
You're a mutt. Well, frankly, I think, I'm an old-fashioned fella, and I think that you should use the best technology in any given category. But Apple really want, of course, this is a business and Apple wants you to use all Apple stuff. And they say it works best if it's all Apple. Microsoft says the same thing. Microsoft has a slightly different attitude. They say, we'll put our stuff everywhere, but the best experience will always be with Windows.
Not taking any much more of your time, but real quickly, with Windows 10, have you heard any conflicts? Because I've been really hesitant to update my office computers from Windows 7 to Windows 10.
I love Windows 10. It is still, I consider it still in beta. Until Threshold 2, the big update in October comes out, I consider it a beta version that Microsoft rushed out so that it could get the back-to-school crowd. That doesn't mean it's not good. It's not. It's fairly polished. I like it. But there are more compatibility issues now than there will be next month. So if you're at all worried, I would just wait till the next big update. They don't want to call it Service Pack 1. It is. And it's a big update. Those of us who are on the fast ring as Windows Insiders, we are on the beta program, already have it. And it's nice. At that point, I'd say, unless, you know, there's a compatibility checker, use it. And if Microsoft doesn't offer you an upgrade, that means that their compatibility checker thinks you are not ready for it, that some of your hardware or software won't work. But the minute Microsoft says, hey, we've got Windows 10 for you, would you like to take advantage of the free upgrade? Once they've come out with Threshold 2 next month, then I'd say yes, because they're telling you it's going to work.
Perfect. Well, thanks, Leo. You've answered all questions today.
I appreciate it. Thank you for being so patient, Alan. Aloha, mahalo, and all that stuff. And I could just, I don't know why, but I imagine you with your Sonos speakers on the lanai with a tropical breeze blowing through, and you're listening to some beautiful ukulele music as the ocean waves come in Oahu. That's just my imagination running away with me. 8888, ask Leo. Look, I'm sorry, we only got one call in that hour. We had lots to talk about. We will take nothing but calls. If you're on hold, my apologies. Nothing but calls in the next hour. I'm going to go crazy answering your phone calls nonstop. The website for the show is techguylabs.com. You can go there and get show notes, links, anything I mentioned. Plus, even better, after the show's over, audio and video of the prior show, so you can go back and watch it if you miss an episode. There's lots of good stuff there. And it's free. There's no sign-up. Unlike other shows, I do not charge you for access to my website. Tech or past audio and video. It's all free. TechGuyLabs.com. That's thanks to our great sponsors. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, with Heather Hammond, the Phone Ranger, Nathan Staten, our musical director. We shall return and service you after these words. Maybe I should say serve you, not service you. I'm so sorry. Scott Wilkinson is here to serve.
I am here to serve, but not to service.
There is a distinction, I hear.
Yes.
All yours, my friend.
Thank you so much. Somebody in the chat room was asking, what does Vizio call the soap opera effect? And every company has its own, or rather, frame interpolation, I should say. Everybody has it different. And I'm trying to look up and see what it is. I don't see it right away. If I find it before I sign off, then I will post it in the chat room. But yeah, they all have their own separate names for it, which is always very confusing. Blip asks, will HDR benefit all TV content other than movies? And the answer is absolutely. I got an email from somebody asking if it would benefit sports, or he wanted to see it in sports, because when he was looking at the video feed from a sports game of football or baseball or whatever, he noticed that there are some parts of the picture that are brightly lit in the sun and there are other parts that are in the shadows, and one or the other of them will look really bad depending on what the camera is actually exposing for. Is it exposing for the bright part or is it exposing for the dark part? If it's exposing for the bright part correctly, then the dark part will be totally indistinct. You won't be able to see any detail in it. And if you're exposing for the dark part correctly, then the light part, the bright part, will be blown out, be completely just blown out. And high dynamic range will take care of that. It will show both equally well on the same screen, and that's the real advantage. Now, most cameras today, the TV stations use and movies that are used to shoot movies, have high dynamic range capability. That is, they can capture the wide, high dynamic range that we all see and take for granted every day. But that has to then be encoded. That dynamic range has to be compressed so that it can be shown on what are now currently available TVs in standard dynamic range. Hopefully, the content that is shot on these cameras is archived in some sort of raw or unprocessed state so that legacy content, stuff that's already out there, can be re-encoded with high dynamic range and made available that way. Now, you know, whether or not the studios will do that with legacy content or not is a question. Depends on whether they think they can make money on it is really the answer. Somebody else in the chat room pointed me to an article on CNET, and I'm looking at it right now, about Technicolor introducing a system that will take standard dynamic range content and convert it into what can only be called pseudo high dynamic range. It's not going to be real high dynamic range. This is the same thing that happens when you make your LCD TV now expand the range of brightness levels that it can display and send it to standard dynamic range content. It will expand that dynamic range outward, but it'll look weird. It'll be distorted from what was intended by that content. So Technicolor looks like they're doing something to maybe be in more control of that than somebody in their home just setting their TV to torch mode and firing away. So this will be interesting. I'm looking forward to checking it out, but this is the first I'd heard of it. My friend Jeff Morrison wrote this on CNET just on September the 1st. So this is a fairly new thing, and I'm looking forward to checking it out. But that's part of that story. Friendly Manitoba, Vizio calls it smooth motion. Exactly so. That's exactly right. I remember now. Thank you, Friendly Manitoba. So Vizio's frame interpolation is called smooth motion. And it does smooth the motion, but it also introduces the soap opera effect, which most people who see it, once they kind of see it and get it, they don't like it. And I understand why. It looks plastic. It looks like a PBS special from 30, 40 years ago. So this is not a good thing, and so I would turn it off. They also have, though, they have a separate black frame insertion mode or control. I believe it's called clear motion. And that one you can engage, and it will sharpen up the motion blur. It'll reduce the motion blur. However, it will also dim the picture. As you can imagine, if you insert a black frame in between the real frames spend less time on the screen, each one of them, and some of the time of each frame is going to be spent with the screen being black. Now, that's going to lower the overall light output coming off the TV, so it's going to make it look dimmer. The good news is virtually all LCD TVs have a backlight level control, so you just crank up the backlight a bit, and you will replace the brightness that got lost by implementing black frame insertion. So that is a Creamy Corn Cob was the one who turned me on to the Technicolor idea. Thank you, Creamy Corn Cob. And that's Jeff Morrison's idea, write-up of the Technicolor thing on CNET. So, yeah, there's, you know, this is a very confusing thing. User 0546 had asked, what about HTPC Blu-ray drives? Will they be similar to UHD Blu-ray capabilities? What is the max data storage? Quad-layer BD can currently hold 128 gigabytes. True, but that's only quad-layer writable. I think it's called BDXL, something like that. But it's not commercial Blu-rays. Commercial Blu-rays max out at 2 layers or 50 gigabytes. The new Ultra HD Blu-rays will have, I believe, two layers at 100 gigabytes or three layers at 166 gigabytes. But right there, that tells you that Ultra HD Blu-ray and regular Blu-ray are different, because a regular Blu-ray has 50 gigabytes in two layers, physical layers on the disc. Ultra HD Blu-ray has twice that much. And so the physical structure is different on Ultra HD Blu-ray than on regular HD and then regular Blu-ray. A home theater PC Blu-ray drive won't work. Ultimately, there will be Ultra HD HTPC Blu-ray drives, but those aren't here yet, and it'll be some time before they actually show up. But, you know, it will happen, but current drives will not. Oh, thank you, Leo. Glad to see that countdown ticker there. So let's see. Yes, here we go. Mike Heiss. Hey, Mike, good to see you. HDR from trucks for sports events will take a while due to the need to update the equipment. That's exactly right. So we're not going to see HDR sports events really in the immediate future. I hope TV stations upgrade their equipment and truck companies upgrade their equipment to accommodate that. But again, it's only going to be if they can make money.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones, smartwatches, and all that jazz. 8888-ASK. Leo, the phone number, 888-827-5536. Lots of new smartphones coming out. We talked about the Note 5 a little bit. My current choice, my current favorite, but the Moto X Pure Edition, the 2015 Moto X, went on sale this week. I ordered one immediately. I'll let you know as soon as I get it. I think I get it next week. And, of course, the Apple iPhone, the new iPhones, will come out on Wednesday. Very intrigued what happens with those. You should know that this is the off year. So every other year, Apple does a hardware redesign. That's when you get the biggest change to iPhones. This year is not that year. This year is where they take the existing iPhone and they update it with some new features, faster processor, but essentially the hardware is the same, which I'm sure is a relief for case makers, so they don't have to completely redesign the cases. iPhone 4 was followed by the 4S the following year, and I think that was exactly the same. You could use the same case again. Then the iPhone 5 came out, and that was, of course, very different from the iPhone 4 and 4S, and so you needed a new case for that. The 5S the following year didn't need a new case. There was a 5C that required that had a different back. Apple was initially, we're told, considering a 6C and decided not to announce it. You know, this is all speculation based on good legwork by people like Mark Gurman at 9 to 5 Mac and John Patchkowski at BuzzFeed. These people have great contacts inside Apple and inside, more importantly, inside the suppliers, the companies that manufacture these. And usually, as we get closer and closer to the release of an iPhone, enough leaks come out of China that we have a pretty good idea of what to expect. This is what the rumor mill says now. And again, it's just rumor. Apple never confirms or denies anything until the day of the announcement. We do know that announcement will be September 9th. In fact, as I mentioned last week, when they sent out the announcement, they had the tagline, which they know everybody's going to deeply overanalyze. "Hey, Siri, give me a hint," was on the invitation. And everybody concluded from that, and I think properly this time. Sometimes we overdo it, but I think this time that Siri would get a big update. Siri will probably, in fact, be part of a new Apple TV. We expect an Apple TV update this year. More expensive, but more capable, including voice search using Siri. The new iPhone 6S, let's call it that, and the 6S Plus. Don't know if Apple will call it that. They have last two times running, 4S and 5S. The new 6S and 6S Plus will, again, look very much the same. Better camera, much improved camera, 50% better, more pixels. Same number of elements, which means that it won't be faster, won't be better in low light. But it will be capable of higher resolution images and 4K video. this is pretty much playing catch up, frankly, to the last 2 years of phones from Android manufacturers. In fact, the new Motorola X Pure Edition, I think, is a 21 megapixel shooter. Doesn't mean it's a better camera by any means. The iPhone cameras, even with 8 megapixels, as the current edition have, are still the best in the biz. Really, really good. Faster processor, that's a given. Apple always does that. Not that we need faster processors. I've never heard one person say, oh, my iPhone 6 is so slow. Never. Or even my iPhone 5 is so slow. Never. So they will give you an A9 processor, better graphics. That's always, you know, that's kind of a given. Supposedly Force Touch will be included. This is something they have on the Apple Watch. You can tap it. That does one thing. And then if you tap and press, that does another thing. And as I mentioned before, I'm underwhelmed by that feature. We'll see what they do with the iPhone. That's pretty much it, at least according to the rumor mill. Will Apple surprise us with something else? They might. We just have to wait and see. Wednesday, we'll all know. Typically, Apple does the announcement, then says you can pre-order the following Friday. That would be 9/11. And for delivery, the first phones deliver 9/18, a week after that. Presumably, according to the rumor mill again, Apple has done really stepped up production, knowing that they can sell a lot of phones in the first quarter when a new iPhone comes out. They're rumored to have been manufacturing phones at a rapid clip, as many as 45 to 75 million phones available. 45 to 75 million phones available come September 18th. Again, all rumors. I hate to have to keep saying that, but just so you understand, I'm not saying anything that I know for fact. This is all what people are reporting, but fairly credible. So we'll see what happens. New Apple TV, as I mentioned, there may be the rumor mills go back and forth on this one, whether there'll be a new iPad announced. Even if a new iPad, an iPad Pro, a 13 or 12-inch iPad, is announced on Wednesday, everybody seems to agree it won't be available until November or December. So don't get your hopes all up on that one. However, it is always foolish to buy a new iPhone now or a new iPad now. Wait, see what happens. And, you know, at worst-case scenario, the price will drop on the old one, and you can buy that one still. You'll at least get a better price. Other new phones still to come? Let's see. Have we heard everything? IFA, the big, I don't know what to call it. It's actually a radio show, radio convention in Berlin every year. It's been going on since the 20s. That's why it's a radio show, Telefunken show. But of last 5 years, it's been a mobile phone show and lots of announcements. We saw Sony announce the new, it was on Wednesday? I think it was Wednesday, announced the new Xperia phones. They look impressive, although I have to say some of the press fell for Sony's hype. They announced the first phone with a 4K screen. Scott Wilkinson will enjoy that. I mean, this is a 5.5-inch phone with a screen that has more than 800 dots per inch. You can't tell. It might be useful in a VR helmet where you get half the resolution because you have two screens. It might be great for that. And your eyes are very close to the screen. You don't want to see any screen door effect. But I don't think anybody needs an 800 dot per inch phone. Battery life's got to suffer. But the irony of all of this is that journalists, of course, immediately rushed to the demo tables to take a look at this amazing 4K screen, highest resolution phone screen ever from Sony. On this Xperia, it's called the Z5 Premium. They were looking and exclaiming, oh, wow. And then it turned out, that's not the premium. The Sony folks didn't tell them, that's not the premium. That's the 1080p phone we're selling. That's just the Z5. The premium's in the back. Just shows you, when you get past 300 or 400 dots per inch, you can't tell the difference. There's no reason to get overexcited for that. However, traditionally, very good battery life on the Sony Xperias, and Sony is great at cameras. They make the best, professional cameras out there. I'm hoping that they will do the same with the phone. They claim a lot for it. We'll see. You can't tell till you use it, or somebody uses it, and you get to see some sample pictures. 8888 Ask Leo. Enough about phones. Enough. Let's take some calls. Answer your questions. Can be about any topic. We haven't mentioned the Apple Watch in ages. because there's nothing to say. We expect a new Apple Watch operating system, perhaps as soon as next week or the week after. That could make a big difference because it'll allow for the first time ever standalone applications to run on the watch without an application on the phone. And that could make a big difference. Did see some nice new watches. The Moto 360 was updated. Sony's got some really interesting new watches. Samsung some new watches, too, that look really good. I'm still skeptical. The smartwatch does not wow me. All right, we go back to the phones. TechGuyLabs.com is the website. Answers to your questions. All the links are there. And more of your calls to come in just a moment. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I did say I'd go to the phones. I am. I will. I'm sorry. I will. Next. Stay here. Please. Our show today brought to you by Prosper.com, a brilliant, brilliant idea that only, frankly, only the internet could have come up with. You know that when you need to borrow money, you can go to your credit cards and pay double-digit interest per year. You could borrow it from your cousin Louie, and the emotional interest will kill you. Remember that money I lent you? No, I know. Please, Louie. It's been 10 years. Please. Or you could put pants on, maybe a nice necktie or a kerchief, and go to the bank, hat in hand. I've got a better way. Thanks to the internet, Prosper.com. It's a peer-to-peer lending marketplace. What does that mean? Well, it means Prosper brings together people with money to lend, in effect, investors, right? Investing in you and people who need to borrow money. At Prosper, you can get up to $35,000 in as few as 5 days at a low fixed rate interest, perfect for consolidating your high interest rate credit cards, for instance. Just pay them all off. Have one payment. It makes it. And by the way, you go through Prosper. You don't have to, you know the guy who's lending you money. Prosper handles all the transactions and stuff. And I think because of bank regulations, they have a bank involved in the background. But really, what's really going on is a marketplace, and that's so cool. You can go to prosper.com/twit. Very simple form. Fill it out. It will not impact your credit score. You can find out what your rate would be, how much you could borrow, how quickly you could get it. Fix up the house. Put it into your business. Prosper, PROSPER.com. Don't rack up more debt on the credit cards. Don't go to Cousin Louie. Prosper.com/twit. And time's running out on that special offer, the $50 Visa gift card. So if you've been thinking about this but putting it off, don't. Because when you get a loan up to $35,000 in as few as 5 days, you will also get a $50 Visa gift card from Prosper. Prosper.com/twit. Try it today. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. Greg on the line from Conifer, Colorado. It's got to be up in the mountains. Hi, Bill.
Bill?
Greg. Did I say Bill? Greg. Gregory. Greg.
You said Bill, Greg, but don't send me a bill.
No bills. No bills to Greg. Only a check to Greg.
How are you doing, Leo?
I'm great. How are you?
I have a question. I'm fine, thanks. I got a question or a comment. My question is, I have a Win 7 a PC, fairly recent motherboard, and I have a couple of 5-terabyte Seagate and desktop USB drives, for extra storage. When I reboot the computer, it won't boot up. It goes to part of the, and I don't think BIOS is the right term, but whatever, the black and white screen is now, it stops.
It doesn't say anything, it just stops going.
It says something that I don't understand because it's all numbers and letters.
Error messages or something.
That's exactly what I was going to say. And so it stops, and so I disconnect them, and I can boot up to Windows and then plug them in. Everything's fine.
I have had that problem myself. This, in fact, one of the diagnostic tools everybody should know about is if you're having trouble booting, disconnect all USB devices.
Of course.
You can leave your keyboard in, I guess, because you might need to press a button. But other than that, disconnect. And almost always, well, not always, but frequently that fixes it. And it has to do with either a bad USB driver or a bad USB device. Have you tried using some but not all of them?
Well, there's a case USB, which goes to the USB riser on the motherboard. There's a motherboard USB, and then I have an add-in card with USB. That's I believe is a PCI USB add-in card, and all three of them.
Can you disconnect? What I would do is disconnect one at a time to see. I mean,
you take the card out. Or
the card's going to be a pain in the butt. I wouldn't worry about that so much. You say it's on PCI?
Go ahead.
It's on PCI?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll tell you the three things it can be, and then you can figure out how to diagnose it.
All right.
Another common one is, and it sounds like you could be in this situation, is drawing too much power. Because if these drives aren't plugged in, but they're getting their power from the USB bus, that can really kill it. So
they have their independent power supply.
Okay, good. So that's one cause. A fix on that would be, yes, don't use bus-powered devices, or disconnect the bus-powered devices and see if you can start up. Or to buy a powered USB hub. This may also fix other problems, so that might be one solution for you. I recommend, instead of putting a riser in, as you've done with an additional USB port, I recommend getting an external USB hub. Because you can get one USB port on your motherboard can support 127 total USB devices. So you can get a USB hub on there, plug that into the motherboard, and have that get its own power, and then plug things into that. That might be another way to fix that. But there are other issues. It could be the USB drivers could be kerfluggered, although given that you have both a PCI USB and extra USB and the motherboard USB, that seems unlikely because you have a completely different USB channel, which would have its own driver.
Yeah.
It can be the master USB driver, the master bus, but I think that's less likely. Motherboard USB, the other thing is they can get fried. And you would say, well, why would all three of them be messed up? Well, it could be if one USB device that you plugged in had a short in it, it would short them successively if you tried it on different ports. So that's another possibility. None of those sound likely. I would try an external hub. Do make sure you're not trying to boot from any of those devices. So go into your USB. Go into your BIOS settings and make sure you're not trying to boot, because if an external drive can be booted from, and it may be that your system says, well, let's get the operating system off of this external drive, and then is waiting.
Well,
or worse, there's a master boot record on there which loads and then hangs.
Well. Okay, so that makes sense.
Those are all things try. I can't, obviously tell you which one of those is a problem. But it is not unusual. I've seen this many times on many computers that sometimes, it won't boot. And then you unplug USB devices and it boots just fine to its internal drive. So there's a whole bunch of things. I would certainly look in the BIOS. That'd be the easiest, quickest thing to do is look in the BIOS. Make sure that you don't have boot from USB turned on. And try that. All right, Tom, thanks for your patience. What can I do for you today?
Well, hi, Leo. I really appreciate you taking the call.
My pleasure.
I learned a new word just already listening. You crufted them. C-R-U-F-T.
Cruft.
What you said?
Cruft. Look it up.
Cruft. I love
cruft.
That word.
I don't think it's a real word, but it's a word used. There are words like kludge and cruft that are used by computer fixers. And cruft is a big one, I'll tell you.
Well, it's one of those words that you don't even have to know what it means. It just sounds like
it does sound like what it is. We've all got a little cruft on our computers.
Well, that's what I really teach people about their health, and that's relating to my question about my website. I've got a real passion regarding food. I like to prepare it, eat it, that kind of stuff. But using it as a way to avoid having to use drugs to monitor my blood pressure. And,
oh, man, I got to go to your website. I need that. I'm getting to that age.
That's the point. And I tell people, if you're young enough where you don't need drugs yet, just look out to the elders in your family and see how many they're taking. And you go, do you really want to go down that road?
I do not. I'm on Lisinopril. I'm on Metformin. I need a better diet. You help me now.
Well, that's what I want this website to be all about. I'm a healthy food coach. And I call myself a preacher. I mean, I'm really excited about it. I'm 71. I look about 55 and feel 45. And everything is still ticking just fine.
I hate you.
I know. What can I say?
How can I do this for myself? What's the website?
Well, I don't have a website.
Oh, you want to get one.
I've been hiding out, waiting to launch myself to get my public speaking out there.
I love it. Hang on for a moment, because I love this. And by the way, you do sound like a young man, Tom. That's awesome. You not only look like one, you sound like one. Hang on, we'll talk, but we got to take a break. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And we do have Johnny Jett, Tom, so it'll take a moment, but I will get back to you because this is a great topic. Creating a website for your business. It's Johnny Jett time. He's been everywhere. He's going everywhere. This man is peripatetic. He's omnivorous. He's been everywhere. Johnny Jett, it's johnnyjett.com, our travel guru on The Tech Guy Show. Hey, Johnny Jett, you're home. You're home.
I am home in Los Angeles. Just got back from my around-the-world trip.
That was so cool to watch on Instagram as you... how many countries did you hit on that trip with you and your wife, Natalie, which is neat?
Yes. I think we went to about six.
So, and you flew. It wasn't an around-the-world sail, which is, by the way, you and I... Why don't the four of us, me and Lisa, you and Natalie, we're going to go on an around-the-world cruise, but later...
When you have to pay for that one.
When we retire. Oh, man, that's my dream.
Yeah, and that's big money. But
well, hey. I'll be saving. I've been saving. And I'll be 100 years old, but I'm doing it.
So, that's the way to do it.
Welcome home. You're not going to be home long, though, are you?
I'm not. I actually leave again in a couple days, and then I do another round-the-world trip.
What?
Not in a couple days. I'm in a few weeks.
Man, you're amazing. So, Johnny, what have you brought? Every week, Johnny brings us an app and a website to help us save money, save time, and travel better through technology. What do you got for us this week?
So, a couple things, first of all. By the way, when you say around-the-world trip, it's really not that big of a deal like people used to think. You know, if you fly from, you know, America to Australia or Asia or Africa, and you just go keep going around, it's basically the same thing as going back home. And it actually sometimes is even cheaper to buy a round-the-world trip.
Oh, you mean instead of going back the other way?
The same way that you came, go keep going around.
Don't retrace your steps.
Exactly. And it's not much farther. And actually, my first website is about that. So it's called The Great Circle Mapper. Their website is G as in great, C as in circle, and map.com, M-A-P.com. So this has been a longtime favorite. It's real basic of all the travel bloggers and aviation geeks because they like to map out where they go. And I should have just tweeted a link that I made for my actual route that I just did. So all you do is
put
in the
airport
codes. So
before you went, you did this? You like went to this site and you...
Sometimes I do it before, but this time I did it after and I just put the link in my newsletter. So you can just type in, you know, it looks like you already did it. Did you do that San Francisco NRT?
This is San Francisco NRT, S-I-N, S-F-O, H-K-G, S-I-N.
So it just shows you exactly what the route is and also how many miles you're going to get. Or not what you're going to get, how many you're going to fly. There's another website that shows you actually how many you're going to earn on elite bonuses and all that thing, all that good stuff. But this is a real cool, simple map for – you know, again, aviation geeks or people who want to see map out where they're flying. And so I did mine. I just tweeted it out and I flew 23,000 miles.
Wow. Wow. That's cool. That's really cool. Yeah. So you'd enter in the airport codes and it'll show you. So let's see. So I went from San Francisco to Narita to Singapore. Where should I go next? What's the airport code for Moscow? You don't know, do you?
Yeah, I do. It's D. I've never been to Moscow, but it's DVO,
man,
me neither.
I want to go. So you just add these up, and then it'll show you your route. It'll give you your distance. It'll give you airport info. That's kind of cool.
Yep.
So that's gcmap.com.
And then my app,
yeah.
By the way, so this is a brand new. It's called the Companion app. Have you heard about this?
No.
It was actually – it's really big on university campuses and was actually created by five college students from University of Michigan. And it was really for classmates who are walking home from the library late at night by themselves or the bar
neat.
Or wherever they're
that's
going.
That's great.
So you can send an SMS to, you know, a bunch of different phone numbers of your friends or roommates or whoever, and it will send them a link to a map. They don't – And the people who receive the text don't even have to have the map downloaded. It will just open up to a browser with a map on it, and it will show, you know, the path that the person's walking. And if for some reason they start running or they get pushed,
oh, wow,
or they fall, it will alert them. It will first send a text to that person or a notification saying, please press this button if you're okay within 15 seconds. If it doesn't happen,
wow,
the phone will start blaring. To hopefully, you know, throw off all the – if there's any muggers or whatever. And also it will contact – it will allow the family members, whoever's listening, to contact the police.
I'm putting this – I'm sending my daughter – my daughter's in college right now. I'm sending her a link. This is a must-have. That's great.
So it started out just for college campuses because it was linked to the actual college campus security. But now people from all over the world are downloading it. So I'm pretty sure it works all around the world. I did not try it outside the U.S., but an article that I read said tens of thousands of people have already downloaded outside the U.S.
Wow.
And it's free on iOS and Android.
That is what, you know, there's an example of something. Person's not trying to make $1 billion in the app ecosystem. They're just trying to make something that is incredibly useful, and what a great idea.
For sure.
You can find out more. It's, I think, companionapp.io is the website.
I don't know.
You see a lot of IOs. I should know, and I don't remember offhand. It's like knowing the Moscow airport code. I can't. but companionapp.io, never walk home alone again. And that is such a great idea.
Yeah. Speaking of, you know, like .io, I saw that Marriott this week just bought, you know, thousands of .Marriott hotels. So trying to make it safer for people to book online with them so they don't get scammed instead of doing like NewYorkMarriott.com or whatever. If it doesn't end in .Marriott, then don't book it.
So they actually have the domain .Marriott.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah, ICANN just started doing that a couple of years ago where if you had enough money – it's hundreds of thousands of dollars, but if you have enough money, you can get a – yeah, they certainly have it. You can get a custom domain name, and that's a great idea to prevent spoofing because only they can give a website a .Marriott – what they call these TLDs, top-level domain. That is great.
And I also have a product for you. I usually do a tip, but this one's like a tip/product.
Okay.
Since we're talking about safety, if you type in Traveler Defense Alarm – you can do it on Amazon or whatever. So this is a real simple tool. You just put it on your door, your hotel room door or your motel or whatever, or if you're renting a place and you don't feel safe at night, you just push the metal clip on between the door frame and the door edge. And if it's open up, it's going to have a huge, you know, real high-pitched alarm. I think it's 100 decibels.
Joseph Gregorovich just sent me several of them.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know if this is a less expensive one, but I'm sure it would do the same job. And
awesome.
It's very simple. You just clip it onto the door of your hotel, and somebody tries to open the door, it goes...
That is too...
Door, window, entry alarm. 90 dB. That's pretty loud. It's not deafening, but it's loud enough that it attracts attention.
And
probably chase the person... Yeah, probably chase the person away. Yeah. It's kind of like the sensor that you'd put if you had a system in your house to detect entry. But it's temporary.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Clever idea. Yeah.
They didn't send me one.
Well, this is a listener. This is a listener. That's a fan. No. He says, I want to protect you. When I'm in the dollar store, I noticed this.
That's awesome.
It's because one of our hosts, Paul Thurrott, stays in dumpy hotels, and he's nervous. And he says, would you please send this to Paul? I will bring it to New York, and I'll give it to Paul when we have our meetup on Wednesday. Hey, Johnny, are you going to be in New York on the 9th?
September 9th?
Yeah. This Wednesday?
No. I'm supposed to be there next week, the following week.
Oh, I'll miss you. I probably shouldn't announce this on the radio because I think we already have far too many people coming. It's not that big a bar, but we're going to have an event at the Rattle and Hum Bar, 3 to 5 p.m. Wednesday afternoon if you'd like to come by and say hi.
I'm sorry you're going to miss it. But real quick, by the way, British Airways has an incredible deal going right now. 5 nights, hotel, and round-trip airfare. Start from New York, it's $575 round trip. From L.A., I think it might be $775.
JohnnyJet.com.
All around the country.
Sign up for his free newsletter. You'll get tips like that all the time. Follow him on Twitter, JohnnyJet, and Instagram. Johnny, we'll see you next week. Safe travels.
Take care. Have a great trip.
Yeah, we're going mint.
Nice.
I'll let you know next week how mint is.
Well, I haven't done it, but I heard it's awesome.
It's the new JetBlue. They do fly flat seats.
Did you get the single seat? Because it goes 212. You want the single one.
Uh-oh. I should look That's at my... So what is the tip? You get... I'm going with Lisa. It's the two of us.
Okay.
Then it doesn't matter.
If you're by yourself, you go... Because it goes 212.
Oh, in the middle, there's a single.
Yes.
But we want a two, so we can hold hands.
Well, then that's what you have.
We love to fly away, don't we? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. Somebody in our chat room. Oh, now I want to get your name. I think it was James in the chat room pointed out that they're probably rehearsing the Apple event even as we speak. I'm sure that's the case. At least in the time of Steve Jobs. Of course, Steve was a super perfectionist, but I imagine that's still the case today. They'd start 2 weeks before the event. They've been rehearsing nonstop. Back we go, and I'm so sorry, Tom. You're very patient. Thanks for hanging on to Tom in San Diego.
Not a problem, Leo. No problem at all.
I hope you didn't see me eating that bagel, because I know...
Oh, I had a bagel myself this morning, so...
Oh, they're... Okay.
I don't eat only always perfect food, but I eat enough of it that... Well, here's
that's
the point.
That's what I'm looking to do.
How good it can work.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Well, good. That's why I want you to make a website. Now...
Yes.
There's a couple of different ways to go with a website. A lot of people... and if you're a small business, if you're a plumber, if you're an electrician, you need a website. You should have a website. In those cases, it's basically a brochure. It's an online brochure. People
right.
go there. You know, if I'm going to hire somebody, before I hire anybody, I look to see if they have a website. Ideally, you'd go there. You'd see a picture of the guy, some testimonials from customers, some information about what they do. That doesn't need to change. You're different. You don't want to make a brochure.
To build this website so that it can accomplish a lot of things going down the road.
You especially want a website that's easy to update. Preferably right. one that has a system so that you can post an article regularly. I would say as often as you can manage it, certainly weekly and preferably even more daily. Because
certainly weekly at least.
At least.
And then I wanted to be able to link to other websites, of course, that I'm referring people to get support. And then also I want it to be a community center where people who are going through a transition plan can contact each other and then have webinars on a regular basis.
Ah, I love all of this stuff. So there are a number of ways to do websites. A big business, even a medium-sized business or a small business like mine, might go to, as we did, a web designer. If you go to Tech Guy Labs, that was created by a company called Lullabot, Lullabot. They're very expensive. I'm not recommending them. They're great.
Okay.
And then for our Twit site, the podcast site, we just got a redesign done, and I can tell you more about that. We went to a company called Four Kitchens. They're out of Austin. So these guys are both they're engineers, they're designers. They took an existing site. This wasn't even from scratch, and updated it, and that cost $250,000.
Wow!
Just to put this in perspective, okay, you're not going that way. I don't want you to go that way. That's too expensive for you.
Right.
But we're a technology company that broadcasts on the internet. The internet portal is extremely. It's our business. It's our store. It's that's where people come. So
sure.
That's worth it. For me to have a really great site. But what you want is not that complicated. The next step down is to go to a hosting company, and there are many of these, that has software that allows a non-technical person to create a website with the
right.
features that you want. I've mentioned before our advertiser, Squarespace, and they're very well known in this space. They start at $9 a month. As high as $25 a month if you want to do e-commerce, and they have a very nice e-commerce solution, which means you can sell stuff, pamphlets, books,
awesome.
Vitamins.
I was thinking about them, Leo, because I love using their technology for credit cards.
Right. They're
and
very,
I was just
not
so
Square, that's different, that's Square. You're talking about, yeah, that's called Square. That's a different than Squarespace. They're not even related.
Oh, they're not. Okay.
No, Square's newer, and it's, that's unfortunate. There's a little name collision there, isn't there? Squarespace.com. You can play with it for 2 weeks for free without even giving them a credit card, so I certainly would do that. A lot of people use WordPress.com. That's free. But they will put ads. Sometimes they'll put ads on your site. And some people don't want that. Similarly, Blogger.
No, I really don't want the ads because you never know what it's going to conflict with.
Yeah. So that's so the free sites almost always inject ads. That's how they pay for it. Otherwise, it, you know, you'd have to pay for it.
Right.
So I certainly would look at Squarespace. It's not free, but and there are many sites like that.
How about Vista? Do they have one, Vistaprint?
They might. Now, so this is another way. Companies like YP, the Yellow Pages, Vistaprint, companies that are trying to do business with businesses will often offer a site solution that's very low cost as long as you participate. GoDaddy does this. Generally, the site design tools there are weak. The reason I like to send people to Squarespace is because they try very much. They're harder to use, but they try very much to be state of the art. And I frankly, the web changes so much, you want to look polished.
Oh, I surely do. This would be something I do want to get a web designer at some point to come in. So let's say I get it rolling 6 months downstream and my cash flow is kicking in. Then I could go find a web designer to help
me. And Squarespace is great that way because Squarespace is at its simplest is anybody can do. But as soon as you get more sophisticated, you can get designers to work because they have a developer platform, the graphics design, everything can be done there. I know they're an advertiser, and I want to give you this disclaimer. That might perhaps color your opinion of my judgment.
I love you.
I try to be – first of all, we don't do advertisers I don't support anyway. So
no. That's I already have Carbonite, for example, which I like a lot.
That's why you'll never see GoDaddy doing an ad on my shows.
No.
I don't like them. But I do like Squarespace, and so I would start with them. It's a little challenging, but I think because you have to kind of spend some time with it. I like it that they give you 2 weeks to do that. So pick 2 weeks where you have some free time and you can really bang on it. They do have good tutorials and stuff. I would start with them, and they can scale you up as big as you want.
I appreciate that. Listen, I want to let you know, in 1970, I had a company that started in 68, and in 1970, we were doing pretty good, so I bought my first LED display calculator.
Wow. And how much was it?
It was $700.
And now you get them for free in a box of Cheerios. I mean...
It had a little plug thing to plug in the wall with a little
amazing
box between the plug and the calculator.
What a world.
Lit it up on the screen.
That's exciting. Hey, do you have a domain name yet?
Well, one I want to use, it's called Purification Works. I believe it's available.
Well, but you better go get it because you just gave it away.
Uh-huh. Okay.
A million people just heard you say that.
So, that's right. Well,
quickly before somebody else does. But once
how do I secure that name?
I would go immediately to GoDaddy or Hover or one of the domain registrars and register it. It doesn't matter where you register it. It costs about $10 a year. It's cheap, but do it quickly. Do it now. Hang up on me. Okay.
Do it now. Would I go to GoDaddy?
My favorite is Hover. Go to another sponsor. Hover HOVER.com.
HOVER.com.
Go there right now.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, Leo.
Thank you. Take care. My pleasure. Good luck, and I look forward to it. Call me back when you get the site up, because I need it. Ah, man, this time is going so fast. Another hour to go, and if you're on the line, hang on. I will get to every one of you. I'm sorry to keep you waiting so long, but there's so many great things to talk about. Hang on. More of your calls to come. 8888-ASK-LEO is the number, the website, where you can find everything I talk about, links, information, even audio and video of the show after the fact. It's TechGuyLabs.com. TechGuyLabs.com. Leo Laporte,
the Tech Guy.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number, 888-827-5536. Let's go to Chris in Bozeman, Montana. He's our next call. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing good, thanks.
What can I do for you?
Well, hopefully you can help me out with just transferring some photos. Pretty simple thing. I'm on an iBook G4, which is somewhat ancient.
Somewhat ancient, yes.
Yeah. So my first attempt was through Dropbox.
So let me, before you tell me what you did, tell me where the photos live.
Right now they're living in iPhoto Library.
Okay, so you have them on your laptop. And where would you like to get them?
I want to get them Most likely either on Dropbox or a external hard drive.
Okay. You want to get them off the computer, in other words.
I certainly do, because I don't use this thing anymore. It's collecting dust, and it's not working.
The easily fastest and best way to do this is to go out and buy a USB drive.
Yeah, I've got that.
Okay. And then just drag. Okay, so they're in iPhoto. So one of the things iPhoto, right?
Yep.
One of the things iPhoto does that makes this is a minor speed bump, but it is a speed bump, is they put everything in a big, honking big file called your iPhoto library. And you could just copy the whole library and open it with a more modern version of iPhoto, but that requires another Mac with an iPhoto on it. If you just want the original photos, they're in that big honking library. And,
right.
the way to get it is to right-click on it, on your G4, right-click on it, or I guess you probably don't have a two-button mouse, so could command-click on it, or is it control?
Yeah.
And you get a pop-up menu. I can't remember if it's command or control. You get a pop-up menu, and you'll see show package contents. Because really what iPhoto Library, despite its appearance as a single file, it's actually a folder with many folders within it. One of the folders is original photos.
Oh, okay.
That's the folder you want. And all you have to do once you've opened the package contents and found the original photos is copy that folder only to the external drive. You got it.
Okay, and then the external drive, I've already used it. It's not full, but it's got plenty of room on it.
Good.
Is there any formatting issues?
Shouldn't be. As long as you can see it and on your Mac and copy to it, you're good.
Okay. And so the Dropbox thing, I tried that initially.
Dropbox is fine. Think of that as more of a backup and sharing files solution. The problem is it's dependent on your upload speed. So if you have millions of photos, you're going to have to wait while they all upload bit by bit, one by one. The other issue is whether Dropbox requires some special software, Dropbox software. I don't even know if they continue to offer Dropbox software for a G4-based computer.
I think that's the issue. I'm signed in, but it won't show any of my folders.
Nobody's been supporting the G4 for years.
Okay.
Apple moved to the Intel platform, and eventually everybody came along for the ride. So I would just – and it's fast. It's just to just copy it over, and now you've got a copy on that USB device. You're going to get a new Mac?
No, I've been PC for a while now.
All right, no problem. So now you just plug that USB – now, if that drive is formatted for a PC, you're good. If it's formatted for a Mac, your PC can't read it. But I presume you've used it with your PC.
Initially with the PC, yeah.
Okay. So the Mac, because Apple grew up in an environment where everybody had Windows, they made sure the Macintoshes could read and write to PC disks.
Okay, great.
Now, it doesn't go the other way around because Windows never had to bother reading and writing Mac disks. So if you can read it on your PC, if it's FAT32, the older PC file format, you'll have no trouble. Newer format, NTFS, might have some difficulty. So in general, what you want to do is make sure that USB drive is formatted for a file system called FAT32.
Okay.
Okay.
Got it.
Good luck. Have fun. Take care. Ruben in Sacramento, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Ruben.
Hey, Leo. It's good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. What can I do for you?
Yeah. I had a question about this. I got a new external hard drive, 2 terabytes for my MacBook Pro because I wanted to back up all my pictures. And I've been spending hours already trying to do this. And I've listened to your show enough to know that, you like to kind of break it down by year and have 3 copies of each, one online, one separate, and one on the drive. But
you don't have to do that. That's just OCD.
Well, it helped me. I have that.
Good man.
I'm very particular about how I want to organize these, and that's where I get tripped up. So what would you recommend as far as the best way, as far as folder structure? Well, I have them right now by year.
So what I do, I use Lightroom, Adobe's product for pro photographers, although I think it's great for anybody who's serious about their photography.
But I have that.
Yeah, or you can use Picasa. But when I import photos in Lightroom, Lightroom does not do this by default, but you can easily set it so that when you import photos, it imports into folders. There's a folder for each one for a year. So I have a folder 2008, 2009, 2010. Inside that, there is another folder with the month number, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. And inside each of those month folders, there's a day folder, 1 through 31. And so it's very easy to, and that isn't something it does by default. I actually don't like the default organization of Lightroom. But once you set it, it will do that from then on. And that way, if you want a photo from December 25th, 2008, Christmas 2008, you go to the 2008 folder, the 12th folder, the 25th folder inside of that, the 25th day, and there's all the photos taken on that day. That's how I do it.
Okay. I guess I'll try that, because I would get mixed up with, you know, like, should I organize by people? Because if I have so many pictures of a particular person.
Well, like, now, if you're using Lightroom, that's where tags are important. So okay. You can, and a lot of people do that to have folders by project or by person. I would go by date, but then within the Lightroom interface, you can tag them. So all the pictures of my wife are tagged Lisa. And if I ever want to find all the pictures on any day of Lisa, I go to the catalog and I type in the keyword Lisa, and there they all are. You can even make smart collections based on that. So you can have folders. You don't see them on the hard drive. The only hard drive organization you see is this day, month, year system. But on the internal organization in Lightroom, and this would be true of Picasa and other places, you can make collections based on any keyword. So you could say, I want all the pictures of Lisa that were taken during our trip to Mexico. That would be a special search, and then you'd have a collection. The nice thing about doing that way in Lightroom is Lightroom has an iPad app that you can sync collections to. So you can use your iPad to go through pictures, pick them and not pick them and so forth. So it's nice to put them in smart collections. This is Lightroom stuff, Lightroom 101. But in general, most photo apps will do this. They will have you can only have one file structure. You can't have multiple file structures. You wouldn't want to. You'd have one file structure. That's why I use date. That's kind of pretty definitive. But then within the application, Picasa or Lightroom, you can assign tags or somehow assign additional metadata to a picture and then search on that metadata, and that works great. Google Photos does that too. In fact, they do it automatically. So if you, and this is a great backup suggestion, automatic, as I do, automatically upload everything in my Photos folder on my computer to Google Photos. I can then use their automatic classification and search for pictures of dogs or flowers or trips to Bulgaria, and those pictures will show up automatically without any effort on my part. And that's nice. But you can only have one actual physical file structure, and that, for me, is year, month, day. I don't know why, but it just seems like the simplest way to do it. Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Love talking photography, as you can tell. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. TechGuyLabs.com is a website. Don't forget. I'll be right back. That's one of the great things about Google Photos. It doesn't store the highest quality version of the photos, but the search is really great. So, for instance, earlier today, let's turn Leo down. I was searching for pictures from our trip to Germany, and I wanted some pictures from Würzburg. So I typed Würzburg in. And it shows me these. I don't know how it knows, but those are pictures I took in Würzburg. It shows me the day that I took them and so forth. So that's really handy. I can also say dogs. And this isn't something I did. I did not go through all my pictures and search for dogs. Now, there's some mistakes. That's a gorilla. I think one of the pictures is our son wrapped in a fur blanket, so he kind of looks like a dog. But generally, these are Aussie. Oh, and these, I'm sorry to say, are cats. But you get the idea. It does a good enough job. Hey, our show today, our podcast today, brought to you by the great folks at Gazelle, gazelle.com. This is a perfect time to know about Gazelle, because there's lots of new stuff coming out, tablets and phones and stuff, and perhaps you're looking at them, but you don't know if you want to get it yet. Can I make a suggestion right now? Go to gazelle.com, at least get a quote for your old device. And the reason is that quote is guaranteed for 30 days. So we know a new iPhone's coming out next week. Do you know if you want it? You don't, because you want to see the specs first. But at least go there and get a quote on your old iPhone so that when the time comes, you can decide, all right, am I going to sell it or not? Gazelle buys a lot of different stuff, from iPhones, cell phones from BlackBerry, as well as Apple, HTC, LG, Motorola, Nokia, Samsung, tablets from Google and Asus and Microsoft. Yeah, you can sell your old Surface there if you want to get the new Surface. But the key is these quotes are guaranteed for 30 days. So go there right now and get the quote. I just got a tweet from somebody who said, I'm amazed. Leo wasn't making it up. They upgraded my they quoted me one price. When I sent it in, they gave me even more money. That's one thing I love about Gazelle. They're great people doing a great job. They've paid out over $200 million to over a million customers. And they give you a great price for your old electronics. And now you can buy certified from them. Gazelle sells some of the best stuff they get back in their certified program. You can buy Galaxies, iPads, iPhones, three different conditions. There's like new, which is like new. There's slightly worn, and they even have some more worn devices. All of them are guaranteed to work because they all go through Gazelle's 30-day quality inspection, 30-point quality inspection to make sure they're fully functional. The screens have no minor major defects and things like that. You also get a 30-day risk-free return, so you're not at risk. Gazelle is great. It's great for selling. It's great for buying. Just keep track of it. Keep it in your phone book, whatever it is, your bookmarks, gazelle.com. And when the time comes, don't forget, get a quote from Gazelle. And if you lose your phone or your kids lose their phones or tablets, it's a great place to buy a replacement. Gazelle.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. Let's go back to the phones. What do you say? Got lots of calls. Julie's next in Orange, California. Thanks for being so patient, Julie. Welcome.
Hi. Hi, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. I have a question regarding IP addresses. I discovered this by accident. I have Gmail, and I went in to my inbox, went all the way, scrolled down to the corner of the right-hand corner, and it says details, so I clicked on that.
That's a great feature, by the way. Really valuable security feature on Gmail. Everybody should know about it. Yeah. So what'd you find there?
Well, that's what I'm asking you about, because if I go, I go in there, and I can read all the details, you know, for only like 48 hours to 72 hours, I figured that out, where your phone is mobile, and you can read if it's like, it says email on there, or if it's a call, or all of this other stuff. Well, my friend has Yahoo, and I told her go do the same thing, but I don't think they have the same feature. Would that be true?
Yeah, not that I know of. Google is, although they should, and maybe they will, and maybe they already do, and I just don't know about it. This is a really great feature on Gmail. You have to use the Gmail web interface, gmail.com. What it does is it tells you the most recent accesses to your account. And this is to prevent somebody that you don't know from getting into your mail. Now, you'll look, and very, very important, at the very bottom of it, it says alert preference, show an alert for unusual activity. Make sure that that's turned on. Because that's going to warn you if it's suddenly somebody from China starts to access your Google Mail, it'll let you know. And that's important. But you're right. It doesn't keep track of this for very long because the list could get quite long.
Yeah, it's very short. But the question I do have, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but it's about, it's really strange because I live in California, obviously, and then it says California, it gives the IP address. I went to different sites. Now, I don't know if I should trust these sites where it says IP address locator to tell you a person's name and phone number that's on that IP address.
They can't do that, but what they can do, yes, don't trust anything that says I know whose that was. That's not meaningful.
Okay.
Everybody on the internet has a unique IP address for any given internet session. It's like your phone number. It may change. Your internet service provider gives you has a range of IP addresses, and each time you go online at home, you could be coming from any one of those. That's why you can't say whose it was. Most people have dynamic IP addresses at home. They change from time to time. They may not change a lot. They may never change, but they're not guaranteed. So,
well, what about if it's your work phone and then...
Well, but hold on. Let me finish because I want you to understand how this works. So the IP address can always tell you who the internet service provider is, because every internet service provider owns a range of addresses.
Okay.
It sometimes can say, and that range of addresses belongs to a geographic location. That's usually accurate, not always. It's never the case that some website can say, and that's John Doe's and his address is 123 Main Street, because most of the time that changes unless you pay extra. Now, you have another internet service provider, your cell phone company.
Mm-hmm.
And they also have a unique address that's assigned to that phone, but that may change as well. In fact, probably does change. So when you see an IP address on this Gmail thing, you may see a variety of addresses. But they should all be attached to something you can say, oh, yeah, that's my ISP, or yeah, that's my cell company, or yeah, that's my company. So if you get an address that is geographically located in China and you don't recognize it, that's something to be concerned about. But remember, your cell phone company's address may be attached to Kansas City, Missouri, if you're Sprint, or some locale not where you live.
Okay. That
so
might be key.
That's really key. So, for instance, I see Axis is from Virginia, but that's not a problem because that's coming from, I don't know, I see New York, I see Washington. Those aren't necessarily a problem. You have to, in the case of Washington State, I see it's through an authorized application. So then I want to look at the details and see and try to figure out, and it's not always obvious, what application did I authorize? And so if you, for instance, let's say you use LinkedIn, and you've authorized LinkedIn to access your Google Mail to go through it and look for contacts.
Okay.
That might show up as a LinkedIn address. So you see some of them say authorized applications. Those are mobile apps that you gave access to your Gmail for some reason. You should check on those. Gmail will give you a list of approved apps. That's in another part of the Gmail of the Google interface. If you go to google.com/dashboard, you can see which applications you've allowed access to that information.
Okay. So if it says California outgoing email through AT&T and it comes up Missouri all the time on several different IP addresses.
That's probably AT&T.
It is AT&T.
Probably.
Yeah. So, it is the base of AT&T.
Right. Yeah. So there you go. And that's why. So you can't – it's a little tricky to assume too much from an IP address. But, boy, is this valuable. And if you do see IP addresses that make no sense at all, you know, it's worth investigating. But it will show you who's doing it, right? And so that's what you really want to check out.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I'm glad you called. This is something that everybody needs to know about. I'm glad you found it. And their next step is to go to google.com/dashboard and look at the authorized apps and make sure that you want to continue authorization for all of those.
Yes, I'm definitely going to do that. I'm just I really got myself very in tune with iPhones and everything in
Good.
The past few years.
Nice.
My husband bought me a wonderful, that's why I just heard you talking about the new iPhones, because our contract was just up in August.
It's time.
He bought me a brand new gold iPhone, the Samsung, or excuse me, not Samsung, iPhone 6 Plus, and I love it.
Isn't that nice? I'm interested because for a long time I've been carrying these big phones, these Note phones. People laugh at me with this giant phone. But for a long time I've been mocked, but I think people are moving to bigger phones. You like the 6 Plus?
I love it.
It's not too big for you.
No, I used to have an Android. My husband has a Samsung Galaxy. He's got the big guy, and it's even bigger than mine.
And do you carry it in your purse?
Yeah, I do.
See, I find it, my wife loves her iPhone 6 Plus as well, and it's really too big for smaller people to put in their pockets. I'm big enough I could put it in my pocket. But I think women don't mind them because they just put it in their purse.
Yeah, I'm tiny, so I couldn't do that.
You wouldn't want to pocket it, but you have a purse. And it's so convenient to have a bigger phone. She says, I'm never going back to a small phone because I could see much more.
I watch trailers for movies on Fandango on it.
Exactly. So I really, this has changed dramatically in the last few years. And it's partly because, even though we've had these bigger phones, Apple gave it the seal of approval with the 6 Plus. And now everybody wants a big phone. Isn't that interesting? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's really, it's intriguing to me. I think, and I may be wrong, but I think that's why Apple's tablet sales have dropped, plummeted, in fact, is once you get a 6 Plus, once you get a 6 Plus, do you need a iPad? I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy, built to perform technical operations on your equipment via the radio. Just all you got to do, put your hand on the radio. Mike, Los Angeles, you're next. Hi, Mike.
Yes.
Welcome.
Hi, Leo.
What can I do for you?
Yeah, I have a laptop that's issued by my company.
Uh-huh.
And can they, if I use my laptop, say, at Starbucks or a public Wi-Fi or even at home, can they know what websites I go to or go on, I should say?
It depends if they put software on there to monitor you or not. Problem is, you may not know. Now, I'm sure that your company at some point gave you a piece of paper, or more likely multiple pieces of paper, with their acceptable internet usage policy on it, and you signed it.
Correct.
And at some point on there, it probably said something like, the company reserves the right to monitor any usage of this equipment.
Okay.
If it didn't, it doesn't have to. The beauty of this for them, it doesn't have to, because weirdly enough, despite the fact that courts have upheld privacy regulations with regard to things like physical mail and phone calls, if you are, for instance, at work on the phone, the boss can listen in until it is obvious that it's a personal call, and then he must hang up.
Okay.
However, courts have consistently upheld the right of employers to do anything they want when you're on the company dime, when you're using company equipment, and or on the company's internet. So even if you're not on the company's, certainly they can. When you're at work, they can do anything they want. But even when you're not, if that's a company laptop, they have the right to put software on there that monitors what you do and report back. I don't know if they did, and you could ask. They're not obliged to tell you, although it's in my opinion, when you have and you should have an acceptable use policy and the employee should sign it, it should also be clearly stated within there what we are doing. Are we monitoring your use? It should say that, but it doesn't have to.
Yeah, and I'll go back and read it. Yes, I did.
I would.
Acceptable use. But otherwise, they're under no obligation, if I understand you. Under no obligation. They can do whatever they want.
Yeah.
And then the same thing, if I use my email, say I'm at work and I go on Yahoo and use my Yahoo email, will they Siri would know that I'm emailing out?
That's an excellent question, because here you are on the company premises using, even if you used your computer with their internet and it was your personal email, the courts have said they can monitor that. They can read it.
Oh, wow. Even with my computer off.
Even with your computer if you're on company premises. Now, if you're using your computer at an open Wi-Fi access spot somewhere else, they can't monitor that legally.
Okay.
And it's weird because they can't monitor landlines either if it's personal. But they are allowed to do that with digital technology. And that seems to be inconsistent, but that's just the way the laws shake out.
Okay, so they can monitor, sounds like, whether yours or theirs.
Yeah.
As long as it's on their work, then they can do it anyway.
If any of this is on company-owned something, whether it's the internet or the computer, there is no expectation of privacy. And while I think that that's wrong, the courts have upheld that time and time again, because there have been lawsuits. And every time, every level of court has said, nope, that's legal.
Wow.
I know.
Okay. So, my question. I thank you, and of course, I wait eagerly for the next iPhone, and that's about it.
Great. Good to talk to you. Thanks for calling. I think that, what's interesting is you have more expectation of privacy using physical mail than you do email. But shouldn't those be the same? But because it's digital, well, I'll give you an interesting example. The courts have held that email loses its privacy protections completely after, is it 3 months or 6 months, after a period of time. That at that point, all expectation of privacy is gone, regardless. And I think that's crazy, but it's because it's digital, and legislators and lawmakers did not, and still do not in many cases, fully understand digital technology, and the laws just don't make any sense. Is it 18 months? Okay, but there's some period of time with, you know, goes by, then the email is just public domain. And that's been used in cases like NSA spying and law enforcement spying to justify a wholesale grab of your email without warrant. They don't need a warrant because it somehow is no longer your private property after a period of time. That's crazy. It's considered abandoned. It's like you left your email under an overpass somewhere. It's crazy. 8888 Ask Leah, what a world. Shell is in West Covina, California. Hi, Shell.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. Welcome.
Thank you. I had a question about my phone. It kind of went belly up the screen. It's all white, and I'm trying to rescue, like, my address book, the phone book, and...
What kind of phone is it?
It's a Doro. I don't know if you ever heard of that one, but...
Is it a smartphone, or is it a feature phone?
It's a flip phone.
Flip phone, yeah. So...
it does not have...
Because it's not a computer... I mean, it has chips in it and stuff, but it's not really a computer. There's nothing you can do. You can bring it to a friendly... Don't bring it to the company store, you know, whoever your carrier is, because they're not friendly. They'll give you a new phone, but they won't... They may or may not preserve your data. But there's, you know, there's all these places like Parrot Cellular where they sell all different phone plans, you know, AT&T and T-Mobile and Sprint or whatever. Those guys, they're independent, and they want your business. And they have machines that will suck all the data off of a dead phone, things like that. They may be able to save your data. And they're more, my experience has been much more inclined to help you than a company store, company-owned store.
My thinking is since, because I was told that they have to program something on your phone, because I know they have the machines, but since they can't see, like, what's going on my screen, that they actually need the actual instructions and help.
No. The machine just sucks the data out of it. Law enforcement has these machines as well, by the way. I should point out that never hand your cell phone to law enforcement because they'll just take everything off of it.
Oh, my gosh.
They don't need to see the screen.
Okay, well,
those devices, well, that's why you want a friendly, you want somebody friendly. Did you buy it? You didn't, Doro, I doubt very much you bought that from a carrier, a wireless carrier. Who'd you get it from?
Basically, it's Consumer Cellular, but they just sell the phones. Doro is actually a company from Sweden. I've been trying to get a hold of the company through
The company, yeah, I'm telling you, find like a Parrot Cellular somewhere where they sell all different kinds. They're geeks behind the counter. They'll go, oh yeah, well, let me see, yeah, I've never seen a phone like this, but let me try it with my machine. And they might be able to get the stuff off. I mean, I'm not promising, but your best bet is somebody like that.
Okay, yeah.
Or if you flag down a CHP officer, say, hey, guy, hey, can you just pull the data off of my phone, because if he likes you, he might do it. You got a nice laugh. Maybe he will.
I just like make sure everybody back up your stuff.
Even back up your stuff. Thank you.
That was like my big mistake for the address book.
Back up your stuff.
And have email. You can't email it.
No. But a more modern phone will do that. You know, if you have an iPhone or an Android phone, they're automatically backing it up, so you don't have to worry about it. You get a new phone, it just automatically puts all your contacts on it. This is the last phone you'll ever have to worry about this with.
Yeah, well, I basically am in search of a new phone.
Get a smartphone next.
My decision, yeah. But.
Thank you, Shell. I got to run. Leah Laporte, the tech guy, the GizWiz, coming up next. Did you hear my my doorbell ringing earlier? I was. It sounds like wind chimes. Actually, if you're listening to the show and you hear wind chimes, that's my Ring video doorbell. And this is what I love about the Ring video doorbell. First of all, I installed it, and I am not a handyman. I am not good at this stuff. We had a wired doorbell at the house, so I took off the old doorbell. There were two wires coming out of the door. There were videos, and all the information I needed came with the Ring video doorbell. And, you know, half an hour later, maybe a little longer because I'm an idiot. Really, probably, if you've ever used a screwdriver, it'd probably take you half an hour. Very easy to do. I had my doorbell installed. And you see, the doorbell comes with everything you need, including drill bits and screwdriver handle and all the different. This is a proprietary bit on here, and I'll tell you why you need that in a second. Notice a USB charger in there and a level. This is the doorbell. It's so great. It has a camera, a wide angle camera in it. It mounts right where your existing doorbell goes. See, here's the plate, and the wires come through there. But because it has a battery in it, a lithium-ion battery in it as well, you can also charge it. That's why it comes with a USB cable. You can charge the battery, and it'll last a year. So you can even use your Ring video doorbell where you don't have existing doorbell wiring. Now, here's why you'd want to use it. You got to have Wi-Fi. It attaches to the Wi-Fi in your house. The doorbell, if it's attached to a wired doorbell, rings your wired doorbell just like normal and everything. I think this one I got to put some more juice in. Let me plug it in. We've been ringing it so much the battery's died. And then it will ring your smartphone, which is super cool. Let me start charging it here. It'll ring your smartphone, and you can even see who's there because this is a great wide-angle camera. So I have the let me just launch my Ring software on here. I have the Ring video doorbell. This is Android, but they have an iOS version. And so I heard somebody at the door, so I could tap that. It's got motion sensor. This is a picture from about 20 minutes ago of my house. Oh, it's Michael leaving the house. Ring.com. See, this is nice because then you know who's coming and going at your house. Is that awesome? Ring.com/tech guy. You're going to get 10 bucks off. It's normally 200 bucks. It's a 10 bucks off. What is it? 190? At ring.com/tech guy. You will love this doorbell. You can also answer it. So let me find. So this is all motion, but here's somebody rang the doorbell. So when somebody rings the doorbell, you'll get an accept or decline. You can actually talk to the guy, even if you're at work, even if you're around the world, you can actually talk to the guy, say hello. Oh, this is the kids riding around. Watch. They rang the doorbell just to bug me. But it's not, you know what, for instance, my daughter sometimes comes in late at night and I'll know, you know, oh, that was Abby. She came in at 2 or whatever. It's great. Ring.com/tech guy. They just got a big investment from Richard Branson, who, you know, the story is great. Somebody was visiting him, I think on his Necker Island retreat. He has this great, you know, island he owns in the British Virgin Islands. And the phone started chiming and the guy said, oh, wait, somebody's at my door. And Branson goes, what? Yeah, I have this thing, and he sees a picture. The guy says, I'm not home. Can you just leave the package on the front porch? Yeah, sure. Branson goes, invests $28 million. He says, that's brilliant. It is. You should get one, and it's not as big an investment. $10 off when you go to ring.com/tech guy. I love my Ring video doorbell. You will, too. Ring.com/tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's time for the Gizwiz. Mad Magazine's maddest writer, Dick DiBartolo, is here. And he joins us each and every week to talk about some fun gadget he's found on the internet. You'll see him on ABC World News Now. You'll see him on our shows and his own very own podcast, The Gizwiz, at gizwiz.tv. Yes. Hello, Dickie D.
How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm super fine. I'll see you Wednesday live.
Now, I'm starting to worry that we have picked a very small venue for this event.
So you want me to stay home? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm thinking we should have done it. When you have meetups, you do it at the boat basin out there.
At the boat basin, yeah.
How many people could you put? It's outdoors. You could put hundreds.
It's outdoors. You could do hundreds.
I think I blew it. I think this bar is too small. Well, I don't assume a lot of people are going to come visit, but.
Well, you know what? It's a weekday and it's during work hours.
Nobody will come. Let's hope. Just you and me and Dr. Mom.
Oh, okay. All right, I'll re-invite Dennis. I said, Dennis, stay home.
Dennis, no, Dennis should come. You. We got. I want he Dennis too. Oh, so what do you got?
Oh, you
for
know,
us?
I have kind of a fun gadget from Ricoh, the camera company, and you know we know that when you're in show business, you should not be on with kids or
pets,
animals,
small animals.
Yes, yes, yes. Right. I think they should add to that. Anything that uses Wi-Fi, because it was so ironic, Leo. So you know, right now in Berlin, the IFI is running,
yes.
And Ricoh is introducing this new camera. So what they did is they had the press event in New York at the same time as they were introducing it in Berlin, and they said, "So let's go to Berlin." We go right there, we see the guy, and then they said, "Now we have a little presentation here using Wi-Fi." Took him 20 minutes to get Wi-Fi in the room working.
Yeah, never.
Anyway, it's a fun camera. It's called the Theta S, and it's their new 360 camera.
Oh.
And what's neat about it is all the 360 cameras I had, they're like a ball with cameras, you know, eight cameras all right. the way around. This is like a small, about the size of a small remote for your TV. And it has two cameras. One points, one goes north-south, the other east-west. And they said, you know, we're just a half a block from Times Square. If anybody wants to walk down to Times Square and just shoot some video. And I did. And at gizwiz.biz, there's a link to it.
Wait a minute.
And
so this is not just stills. This is a 360 video.
It's 1080p video. And I'm standing there holding the camera. And you see me, you don't even see the camera because somehow the camera gets eliminated when the video processes in the camera. And then you take your mouse and you can just whirl all around Times Square. I was very impressed.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you hold this in your hand.
Yes, you hold it in your hand. And then you take your mouse.
YouTube supports this. So YouTube lets
you. Yes, exactly.
Wow, there's Dick.
Yeah.
You snuck up
and I'm
me.
Holding the camera. You don't even notice.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, of course, the camera can't take a picture of itself.
No.
But there's your hand.
Well, there's as close as you can get to
I can even go all and look straight up.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm getting dizzy. I'm getting dizzy.
Wow.
So this, you put this up on YouTube. This is cool. So if you look for Gizwiz and Theta S. How much is this? I want it.
The brand new one, which I think it does live streaming 360 video, is going to be $349, and that's out in November.
I have to wait till November.
And they have a lesser model that's out now that is at BH Photo for $279.
But does it do live streaming video?
It does not. I believe it does not. And it has 4 megabytes of built-in memory, where the new one has 8 gigabytes of built-in memory.
This looks really cool. You know, I think Casey Neistat is doing 360 videos with this. He must have got one. Wow.
And also, Google was there, and they were announcing that now people can upload 360 street videos.
Yeah, this is YouTube. So you can YouTube will support this.
Yeah.
If I put on a virtual reality helmet, I wonder if I can also see this in VR, like I'm standing next to you. Wouldn't
you know what?
Cool?
I bet you can.
Yeah.
Because they had a VR. They had someone playing with VR there.
It's really easy to get dizzy.
Yeah. Especially us.
Wow. This is very interesting. Not till November, though. I'm for sure going to get one when this comes out. It's from Ricoh, R-I-C-O-H. And it is the Theta S.
S.
T-H-E-T-A-S. Dick is at gizwiz.biz. If you want to see the video, just go there, gizwiz.biz. That's his website, and he's got a link to his YouTube video. You can also watch his show, gizwiz.tv. Support it, too. It's always a good idea. And don't forget the What the Heck Is It contest. It just ended, so there's a new one.
Yeah.
So what was that group? Kind of grooved.
That thing is it's from a company called Moco Master that makes all kinds of coffee pots and gadgets, and it is their new stainless steel coffee bag sealer.
Did anybody get that right?
One person got it exactly right. 4 people were close, but you know what? We like the funny things. It's a curler for pigtails.
Oh, I like it.
It is the least fun Pez dispenser you'll ever see.
So you get an autograph. Galaxy? That's an autograph magazine right there,
right,
I could tell.
Right there, yeah. The Galaxy Note S Pen extractor.
Yeah, that's what I needed.
Yeah, I happen to see you doing that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I thought, oh, my word.
Yeah, I broke my Note 5 by sticking... Well, I didn't break it completely, but the pen sensor's broken. Yeah. Sticking in the pen upside down. If I had this device, maybe I could have saved myself.
Maybe.
Now, there's a new gadget. Go to gizwiz.biz, click the What the Heck Is It link, and identify... Oh, my goodness. Yeah. What the heck could that be? Right. I don't even want to guess. If you... he's got... 12 Mad magazines autographed by Mad's maddest writer, that's Dick DiBartolo, for the right answer, up to 24 for the best silly, funny answer. Gizwiz.biz. And you have a couple of months. This will go through the end of October.
That is correct.
Fun. Always fun. Ricardo, thank you so much.
Yes, sir. I look forward to seeing you Wednesday, and I'll hang around later for
GizFit.
It's Giz
too late to probably change the location of the event, isn't it? Do you know the guys at the Boat Basin Cafe? Can I?
Yeah. The manager is John.
How close is it? Could we walk there from... If Rattle and Hum, the bar that we're going to meet at, is too big, can we walk over?
No. You're at 34th Street on the east side, and the Boat Basin is at 79th Street and the river.
So that's only 45 blocks. Right. All right. But I do, you know, if it gets really big, we're within half a mile of Madison Square Garden. We could just walk over there.
There you go. There you go. And I think that $50 admission charge is not a bad idea.
Thank you, Dick. We'll talk again next week.
Bye.
Take care. Got a minute left. I might have time to do Roy in El Monte, California, if you can ask quick. What's up, Roy?
Have a Sunny Vio. Thanks for taking my call. Have a Sunny Vio that... when you go to get on the internet, it says that the SSL certificate error, and I've tried to Google it.
All right, I can solve it for you. Good news. This is easy. Good. Check your date and time.
I did that.
Your date and time's correct? You're sure?
Yes, I did that.
Because those SSL certificates are set for a certain time frame. When the computer loses track of what time it is, they'll stop working.
I did that. That didn't work.
So, is this for any site that you go to?
It won't even hook up to the internet. It won't even connect.
It will not connect. Yeah, that sounds like you might have something not so nice on there. I would say best thing to do, I hate to say it, is get those recovery disks out and restore it. Sounds like something bad has happened, and that's not good. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.